Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Hey guys, how's it going? Rick Ingram here. You're listening or watching, depending on what kind of senses you have. Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. We grab strangers from all walks of life. The people that most people would say don't talk to them, you know, because they're out there creeping. And we actually found normal people who will not murder me. That's like my number one rule. Well, I don't want to say not murder, but less likely chance of a violent murder. So thank you for being here. Thanks for watching, listening. My first guest today, Jared Klickstein.
Jared Klickstein, yeah.
That's Klickstein is one word?
Klickstein, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, is his middle name Click? Because that's bizarre. No. Jared Klickstein.
Yeah, most people pronounce it Klickstein, but it's Klickstein.
It is.
That's what it is, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a victory. Thanks for listening. Where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Boston.
You're a Boston guy.
Yeah.
Are you actually from Boston? Are you from outside of Boston and you just say you're from Boston?
Well, a lot of people do that, but I was born in Boston, downtown Boston.
This is legit.
Yeah, raised in West Roxbury.
I don't know where that is, but
it's in Boston.
It sounds like Boston.
Yeah. it's pretty nice.
I have issues with people from Massachusetts.
I would, yeah.
Not so much the people from Boston. The actual people from Boston have always been okay. But
yeah.
I knew a guy from Worcester.
My cousins are from Worcester.
One of the worst human beings I ever knew.
They're terrible.
Yeah, it's a terrible place.
Yeah.
He was a white dude. He had a Jerry curled mullet.
Yeah, that's
his name. he went by Nicky, and I'm pretty sure he just did a lot of cocaine. That seemed to be his
thing.
Yeah,
there's a lot of cocaine there. Yeah.
So, anyway, welcome back to Talking Shit on Worcester.
Yeah.
Dedicated to
defaming
the worst city on the planet.
No, it's terrible.
Do you love Boston?
Well, when I was 12, I moved to Oakland, California, so I really consider myself from Oakland.
Yeah, formative years that turned you into a man were the streets of Oaktown.
My years in Boston were very bad.
Yeah.
My childhood was very bad.
It was.
Yeah.
What happened?
My parents were heroin addicts and crackheads.
Both?
Both of them, yeah.
Listen, if you're going to go, you might as well go both ways, you know? That's an open-mindedness that has to be appreciated to some level.
No, I appreciate it. I've actually followed in their footsteps. So.
You did?
Yeah, yeah.
Which route did you go first, cocaine or heroin?
Heroin.
You went heroin?
Yeah.
It's a weird taste.
It's a taste of it?
Well, I just feel like you got to go crack first. And then once you realize, you know, this isn't going the right direction, that's when you delve into heroin.
Well, when I like to get high, I like to do crack first, and then I come down with heroin.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that makes sense.
I did try heroin first. So
you had a plan, and you stuck to it.
Yeah.
So mom and dad, they're in Boston.
Yeah.
Crack and heroin. Are they still alive?
My dad's still alive.
Dad's still alive.
Yeah.
Do you still have a relationship with him?
Yeah, yeah. He got clean like 10 years ago.
Okay, so now it's cool.
Yeah, yeah. He's cool. Yeah.
And when did you start doing heroin?
About 19.
About 19. You're 19. How old now?
I'm 32.
Okay, so you started doing little H?
Yeah.
Up in Oaktown?
In Santa Cruz. I went to UC Santa Cruz.
Banana slugs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll do it. If you go to a college where the banana slug is your mascot, you got to do heroin.
That's exactly. Well, everyone was doing it.
I've been telling people for years. honestly, my first semester of college, I went to a small art school in Santa Fe called the College of Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And it no longer exists. That's how shitty of a college it was. It actually disbanded. But there was a large heroin problem because it was an art school.
Yeah.
And like my third or fourth day, I walked into the bathroom at my dorms, and there was a dude laying on the floor in the bathroom with a needle in his arm. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I never even had a beer at this point. Yeah. And I was more freaked out than anything, but, you know, I kind of shook him awake.
Yeah.
And it took a good minute of, like, trying where I'm like, is this dude dead? What do I do if he's dead? And he woke up, and he goes, I go, hey, man, you're on the floor of the bathroom. And he goes, "Oh, I'm good. I'm just sick." Yeah. And I go, "Yeah, there's a needle in your arm." And he goes, "Oh, yeah." I go, do you need help? What do you need me to help you do?" And he's like, "Oh, I just need to go back to my room." And so I had to help this dude up. Yeah. And I'm like trying to figure, like, do I pull the needle out? You know, no one told me the rules.
Yeah.
I was a avid member of DARE. And yeah. At no point. You also were a graduate of the program that works.
Yeah.
DARE in itself is a weird thing. They tried.
Yeah. They tried.
Like, I was growing up in a suburban Kansas City school, and there was no way that I was ever going to see any of those things. But they're still like, "Kids, this is heroin. If you take it, you'll feel fantastic. Yeah. Don't ever do it."
I don't know if they still do it.
I don't. Yeah, I have no idea if they have DARE.
I don't know.
But it didn't work, so I don't know that it matters.
I mean, I was going to DARE class, then coming home to my parents nodded out on heroin, so.
Damn.
Sorry to be somber.
Did your parents' drug addiction make you want to try it just because you were like, if they're fucking up this bad, it must be great? Or was it just like a rebellious, they did it, I'm going to try it?
No, I stayed away from drugs. I drank heavily in high school and stayed away from heroin and cocaine because that's what took my parents down. But I got my wisdom teeth taken out when I was 19 and they prescribed me Percocet.
That'll do it.
And it was like a switch got flipped and it was just like within 3 months I was just a junkie, you know. It cured every problem I ever had.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it's in my genes, I don't know.
They took out the wisdom teeth.
Yeah.
And you got stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but I think we've figured out most of the problem with this country right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So honestly, the heroin issue in this country does seem to be mostly based in the overusage of pain medication and then inability to get said pain medication.
Yeah,
and replacing that with heroin.
Yeah.
So were you just doing pills at first and then?
Yeah, I took the pill for the wisdom teeth and it kind of cured all my,
the anxiety and everything.
And all that. Yeah, like, you know, hating myself because I grew up with the drug addict parents and everything. And, so I ran out and I was like, I need to get more of this.
Right.
And someone said, well, if you go down to the train tracks and you walk up like a mile, there will be like a Mexican guy with like a headlamp on and he'll flash it at you.
This is legit?
Yeah.
That's your first heroin purchase was a mile down the train tracks.
Yeah.
Mexican with a headlamp.
Yeah. And they're like, his name's Pedro.
His name is Pedro.
He was like, bring a flashlight, flashback. Adam,
yeah,
and you guys will communicate that way. Then you'll approach, and because I wanted OxyContin, and they said, "Well, Pedro sells heroin. He might have OxyContin."
Right.
And Pedro didn't have OxyContin, so I bought heroin.
Fucking loser.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just have the fucking OxyContin, Pedro. Yeah. Do you think he's listening right now? It's important that we communicate with him.
He crashed a Ford Explorer and went to prison.
He did.
Yeah, and they deported him.
Fucking Pedro, man.
Yeah.
See, and this is one of my biggest problems with immigration is he's out there taking a perfectly good heroin dealer job from a decent American heroin dealer.
It's true. It's honestly true.
So you're walking down the train tracks and you're basically going, yeah, I'm the dude who's wandering down train tracks. It's time to fucking make a change in my life for the worse.
Yeah.
It's just a baffling scenario, I suppose. So you get your heroin. Would you smoke it, the first heroin?
Yeah,
because
I was already kind of smoking the pills. Because for some reason, like, the pharmaceutical industry made pills called OxyContin that were basically heroin, and you could smoke them. I mean, you could put the pill on the foil and smoke it and shoot it. And maybe that's a coincidence. I don't know.
It certainly seems like it just happenstance.
Yeah. So I knew how to do it when I got the heroin. I just said, okay, I'll do what I did with the pills. And and I just, you know, I started doing heroin and fast forward a couple of years later, I'm on Skid Row in Los Angeles and I was like a good college kid, you know?
Yeah.
And
one of the banana slugs finest.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just crazy how that works, you know. So
now Skid Row, obviously one of the more frightening places in the world.
I'd say for sure, definitely the country.
Yeah,
probably the scariest part of the country.
Someone drove me down there once, a comic here named Don Barris, because he asked if I'd ever seen it. I said no, and he goes, "Oh, I'll drive you down there."
Yeah.
And I remember looking around and just being like, "I can't believe this is America."
Yeah, that's America.
It's like full-on zombies.
Yeah.
It was the first time I ever saw someone just blowing someone else on a sidewalk.
Yeah, you'll see
but
that.
But not the last.
Yeah.
So now you're in Skid Row. Were you living down there or were you just down there?
Yeah, I was living down there. This was like 2011. I wound up in L.A. because I have family in L.A. that I tried to leech off of for like 2 weeks, and they didn't want to, you know, they weren't going to do that. So they kicked me out, and someone told me, go to Skid Row. You can go there. And then you just get a tent, you know, you start stealing stuff to kind of get money for drugs and stuff like that. And I was just living on Skid Row and didn't fit in that great, but you know, I made it. I lived there for about 8 months that time.
Wow.
Yeah.
And just a tent.
Well, at first I didn't have a tent and I would just kind of find places to sleep. But then eventually I did acquire a tent. But my problem is that I kept selling the tent for heroin.
Smart.
So.
If you got to choose between sleeping in a tent or sleeping on heroin, obviously the latter is the better choice.
Because if you're on heroin, you can literally sleep anywhere.
Anywhere. I would imagine that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, the world is your bed at that point.
That should be like the slogan for heroin.
Listen, I've been trying a long time to be the madman of heroin, and the world is your bed, I think, is going to be the one that takes us to the top.
Perfect. Because it is. I mean, you can pass out in a porta potty, in a jail cell, like anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
Two of the finest places.
Yeah.
To really, if you're going to sleep and you want people to know that you don't have insomnia, porta potty and jail are definitely top of the tier.
Yeah. For sure.
So what gets you out of Skid Row? How do you make the transition away from hell on earth?
Well, what happens is I go through a process of, I will call my dad who got clean off heroin, and he'll say, I'll buy you a Greyhound ticket to Florida, where he got clean. And and you can try to get clean here. You can move into a sober living and get a job. And I've done that like three times where I just kind of, but then you're in Florida, you know? So.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like a better place to. Yeah.
Yeah. So I leave. I kept leaving. So I do that for 7 months, 6 months, come back and, you know, save up some money. But eventually I'm back on Skid Row. So I've been back a few times and it gets worse every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Skid Row in a lot of ways has expanded to other parts of Los Angeles in the last 5 to 10 years. It just seems to kind of be a gradual expansion of tent cities everywhere.
Yeah, definitely the last like 2 years. I got clean like 3 years ago, so I have been out of the game for 3 years. But last time I was on Skid Row was about 2015, and that expansion had begun. But I still stayed true to Skid Row, so I stayed down there.
Yeah, I mean, that's your territory. You're representing Skid Row at that point. You don't want to be like a valley heroin addict.
No, you got to walk everywhere. You know.
Yeah, it's way hotter.
Yeah, and I like crack, and they sell crack in Skid Row. They don't. That's really where they sell crack.
That's the crack spot.
Yeah, crack kind of like got old, I guess, in like the mid 2000s, and it was kind of hard to find besides Skid Row. So, and I loved crack. So like I just couldn't venture too far away from it.
You liked crack more than heroin.
Well, heroin is like this relationship that you develop with it. It's like a girlfriend that you're very codependent with, but you hate because it makes you sick and it costs so much money. But crack is $5 and it's very fun. And you can take a hit of crack and you're on a mission. Like you think like the FBI is after you and you can turn into like you're literally purchasing an identity for five to 10 minutes.
A pretty awesome identity.
A Jason Bourne identity, basically.
It turns you into Jason Bourne. Kids, get out there. If you want that super lifestyle.
Yeah.
How long were you doing heroin before you started doing crack? And did you start doing crack after you got clean from heroin?
No, I got into meth first.
Okay.
But meth was too crazy and I kept going to jail whenever I do meth because meth makes you like do really stupid shit, you know? So I actually quit meth with crack.
Wow.
Yeah.
So listen, whatever it takes to get off meth, I think that is the worst.
Yeah.
I knew kids, I was 20 and the people I knew were like in their late 20s and early 30s.
Yeah.
When I was in college before I moved to LA, and there was a lot of them on meth. It was pretty prevalent in the Midwest in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And I worked at a restaurant as a cook, and my morning kitchen manager just smoked meth all the time. Yeah. And it was great for opening the kitchen in the morning,
yeah.
but there was those days where you're like, where the fuck did Joe go? And then you go into the bathroom, and Joe was smoking meth in the bathroom at a Uno's Pizzeria
yeah.
in Lawrence, Kansas. And you're like, dude, it smells like you're smoking meth in here. And he's like, I'm not doing that. And you're like, well, then who's smoking meth? There's only three of us in the restaurant.
Yeah. Cooks always smoke meth.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I was the only one, I think, who didn't.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some of the foulest human beings I've ever known.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
You turn into a monster.
The type
you know?
Of shit they were yeah. into. And
yeah.
This one dude showed up to work one morning and is literally just had a scab that went from his chin up his nose and onto his forehead.
Yeah.
And I go, dude, what the fuck happened to your face? And he goes, oh, I did a bunch of meth, and then we got really drunk, and he fell straight forward on concrete and scraped his face straight up and then continued to just party all night.
Yeah.
And so he showed up, he had dry blood all over his shirt. And,
yeah, I always end up, there's always blood when I'm on, meth starts out really fun. And then within a year, you're just, there's blood all the time and
yeah.
jail and mental institution. And crack was a way out of that.
It got you where you needed to go.
Yeah.
What's the strangest place you ever woke up?
Oh my God. I mean, I can tell you, but it's not pretty.
That's okay.
Okay, I woke up in a bathtub in Chinatown, full of blood. In someone else, it wasn't my bathroom. I had broken into an elderly Asian couple's apartment and woke up in their bathtub, and I was actually missing part of my face, and I had to get reconstructive surgery on my face, that was my bottom, really.
Yeah, that's. That sounds like an intense day.
Yeah.
So how did you fuck up your face?
What? Well, there's a...
And the blood is from your face?
Yes, and other things. I clearly got into some fisticuffs with somebody. I don't know. But I got, you know, the shit kicked out of me and did some irritation of my own. I blacked out. I completely blacked out. The last thing I remember was getting a tattoo on my arm from a meth head.
Okay.
And, I was on heroin, meth, and crack, so that was like...
Triple threat.
Yeah, I can't do that, so...
That's full-on riding the snake, man.
Yeah, so...
I didn't even know people could survive meth, crack, and heroin at once.
Well, what's funny is, like, heroin will kill you, so, like, I basically overdosed on heroin, but the meth keeps you alive in zombie mode.
Right.
It keeps your heart going, so in zombie mode, I did some, like, zombie shit, I guess, And I woke up with them screaming at me and
because you were in their bathroom.
Yeah, yeah. And I had to, you know, I ended up going to Skid Row with, I had some money left and I bought some heroin to kill myself because I was like, I can't not living after this, you know. So
yeah. Yeah, you peaked.
Yeah. So so I did. I killed myself in like a public bathroom on Skid Row and I was dripping blood, so the paramedics were called and they saved my life, and I got brought to the hospital, and they, fortunately, they did surgery on me, and they kind of fixed me. You know, I'm scarred, but they fixed me pretty good, so I'm really grateful for that, and that was kind of like the thing that I was like, I can't fuck with this anymore.
Yeah.
But I did fuck with it one more time, and I blacked out, and I woke up missing my toe. And well, that's the last time. That's I said, fool me once.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, take my toe.
Yeah.
Time to get clean.
Time to get clean.
Which yeah. toe did you lose?
My big toe on my right foot.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
I removed it myself.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Apparently. I don't remember, but.
So you had witnesses go, oh, by the way, bro.
No, I woke up and my girlfriend went out of town.
You had a girlfriend?
I had a girlfriend.
I mean, just imagine. What a player you have to be at this level of addiction and
yeah.
still be.
Well, it was a rehab girlfriend.
Sure.
And okay. she was a blackout drinker. So I don't know if she ever met me really. I mean, so she had, she was unconscious a lot too, but.
A rehab girlfriend? Is that
I met her in rehab. Oh yeah.
So you meet someone in rehab and you're like, hey, we could be good together. And then
yeah.
you're like, wait, we're really bad for each other.
Yeah.
And
but you're like, but we're going to keep doing that.
Yeah.
Until
anyway,
one of us goes to jail or something. So,
yeah.
or loses a toe. So she went out of town and I was house sitting her apartment, and I got high on the trifecta and blacked out and woke up in her bathroom and there was blood everywhere. And I said, not again. This is
who got me this time.
So
it was me.
I was clipping my toenails and I just kept going and I removed the bone out of my big toe.
Wow.
So I actually didn't lose the toe. They had to cut the toe off at the hospital.
Wow.
So, technically I didn't remove my own toe. I removed the bone within my toe.
So, I mean, there's an extreme level of passion enjoying narcotics in your life.
I really used to enjoy them. And then I got like too crazy with like, I'm trying to think of who's that director? Like Tenet, that movie Tenet with Christopher Nolan. It's like, he just got too crazy. It's like, man, you were having a good time with the Inception and all that, but Tenet.
Now
like,
you're taking you're it too far. Too crazy. And
so I just got too crazy with it. And, no fun was left, so I got clean.
Wow.
Now I'm like relatively normal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what's shocking to me. I'm like, you seem like a pretty normal dude.
I'm pretty normal, yeah.
What do you do now?
I work in visual effects for television.
Okay. I mean, there's like people who go to film school for that shit.
I got very lucky.
I lived life.
I was a cabinet maker for off and on for years, and I kind of got... recently, a few months ago, I got lucky with a friend and I studied some visual effects stuff and they gave me an opportunity at a company. So
nice.
I won't name that company because they don't know that I don't, you know, they don't know.
They don't know that you are a champion of a lot of insanity and lifestyle.
They know a little bit. Not the details, But I'm on a good path, you know. I got that going, and it's interesting, and it's not swinging a hammer every day, so it's cool.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And any rehab girlfriends left?
No, I actually made a point to stay away from the rehab girlfriend, and I think that's really what worked this time, is I really just kind of focused on myself and stayed away from women. And, you know, eventually I got a girlfriend in, like, year two, and we dated for like 8 months and then we broke up. I moved up to Oregon for a little bit and I'm single now. So
you're single.
Yeah.
Well, I think the ladies are probably going to be calling after
from the rehabs. Yeah.
They're going to be calling from the rehab because they're like, he still has connections. Yeah. You know that. You don't go trifecta and just throw away all the numbers.
No, I'm done. I'm retired.
You're retired.
I'm retired. Yeah.
He's calling it. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, man, that is absolute insanity.
Thank you.
When I met you, I'm like, this seems like a normal dude.
Yeah.
Some tattoos, but like nothing crazy, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I want a murder carved into your forearm or something.
No.
But that's what I expect from someone who has lived that kind of lifestyle for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
I'm like, he might still stab us at any moment.
Listen, it's just the drugs. When I'm on the drugs, I'm an animal. But other than that, when I'm not on the drugs, I'm, you know, a balanced person.
And you talk to Dad still?
Yeah. He's doing good. He lives in Florida.
He's a Florida man?
Well, he went to Florida for rehab and got on probation, like, immediately for smoking crack and doing something. So he actually was, like, forced to become a Floridian.
Nice.
For 5 years.
Can't leave the state.
And then once he was allowed to leave the state, he was
happy.
He was Florida man already. Yeah. So he's happy. I'm going to go see him on September 10th.
Nice.
I'm going to go see him. But both of us are clean. Yeah.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
I know enough people who have, ridden the dragon to know that shit is tough and it ends a lot of people before they can get better. So
yeah, for sure.
Very impressive that you were able to get through that and stay clean. And thanks for being on, man. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. We'll be right back, guys.
Say hi to everyday people.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Rick Ingram talks to strangers. We got another stranger. I'm now outnumbered in strangers. This is the life I was always meant to live. I got Jason Gonzalez.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes.
Jason, thank you for being here. We got Jared Klickstein.
Klickstein.
Jason, thank you for being here, man. What do you do? Are you from L.A.?
Actually, kind of like his story, too. I'm from Montebello.
Okay.
Originally. And during the 90s, it was active. Gang life was just going through the roof, you know, the LA riots and everything like that. My dad said, fuck this shit, we're out of here. And my parents took me off to Palm Desert.
Nice, okay.
The Coachella Valley.
And so Palm Desert, I don't know that they have gangs there.
No, it was funny because I literally had the best of both worlds. I went from being the majority to the minority.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first day of school, I'll never forget, I come home, I'm like, Mom, what's a beaner? She's like, you stupid.
Damn. I no clue. Just ripping you straight out.
Yes.
Wow, okay, so Palm Desert's what? It's white trash people, right?
No, I mean, it's, you know, upper middle class.
Oh, it is, okay.
Pretty rich
people.
Well,
there are upper middle class white trash. I can assure you from growing up in suburban Kansas. I knew a lot of people who had a decent amount of money but were 100% hillbillies somehow. So Palm Desert, what's that life consist of? What are you doing out there?
Nothing. I learned how to power drink out there when I was in high school.
Nice.
I mean, that's pretty much it. And then right after I graduated high school, I moved back into LA.
Okay. You said you needed, you wanted that Montebello lifestyle back.
Oh, yeah.
I talked to someone before who was from Montebello, and I explained to them that Montebello to me was just an advertisement on hip-hop radio from the early 2000s where there's a lot of talk about heading down to QC's 2020 in Montebello.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
That's where I learned about getting down with that hyphy movement. And I still don't know what it means.
Neither do I, but it sounds
but
funny.
I just know that they say, yeah, come get hyphy this hump day at QC's 2020. So I always wanted to go. I don't know anything about Montebello. I don't know. Yeah. What it consists of.
Yeah, it borders East LA, so I pretty much grew up in Montebello, East LA. I was always in East LA, so it's like I found me out there and everything.
All right, and you're Mexican.
Yes.
Just, you said beaner, which I would never say because I'm from Kansas and it rolls too naturally. But you're born here?
Yes.
Parents from here or from
parents
Mexico?
Born here.
Generations.
Grandparents are born here. I'll tell you this much. My grandfather was one of the families that got kicked out of Dodgers to build Dodger Stadium.
He was Chavez Ravine.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He was one of the last families to leave. And well, I mean, they kicked him out. So he lived right around third base area, he says.
Damn. That's fantastic. Where are you from, Grandpa? Third base, Dodger Stadium. What do you do? Do you have a job?
No, I was in the casino business for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then...
Which casino, can you say?
Oh, yeah. I worked for the Aguacanta band, you know, Aguacanta tribe.
Okay.
Out there in the Coachella Valley.
Okay.
Yeah. Aguacaliente. I don't
know. Got it. She had to caucasoid that for me.
Yeah, sorry about that.
What'd you do at the casino?
I dealt blackjack for many years. I was also a supervisor at another casino, but yeah, I dealt blackjack. I was in and out through the whole casino business. I know quite a bit.
Did you see anything crazy while you were there? I imagine.
What do you want to know? What have you, everything from people dying.
You saw someone die at the casino?
Yeah. I mean.
How many people have you seen die?
In front of me, three.
Three.
Jesus.
Listen, man. Listen, you got the guy who did the meth. Heroin and crack to be like, that's too many deaths.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
So they're dying of what? These are old people. They're dying of heart attacks.
One was an employee. He died. He was an older man, and I guess he had a heart attack. I mean,
yeah.
And what it was kind of funny is they were giving him chest compressions, and there was this little lady playing like a slot machine, like a Wheel of Fortune, something like that. And smoking a cigarette, and when they're giving him chest compressions, they're like, ma'am, can you please move? Ma'am, I please. And she's like, yeah, whatever. And then they literally had to pick her up and move her.
I mean, she found her machine. Yeah. I don't think the paramedics respected how important someone's slot machine is to a serious slots gambler. Yeah. All right, so that's one death. What else you got? Who else is dying?
If you want to die, I mean, I've seen everything from fights. I seen a high heel get some chick was there were like, it was like a big old fight, and she took off her stiletto and hit some guy over the head with it and stuck in his head.
Damn. That's like Steven Seagal movie type action. So like, he got the stiletto to the skull, and it cracked into the brain?
Yeah. That wasn't at, I mean, that was at another casino I worked at, but yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
I've seen people like, fuck, like.
In the casino?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now we're talking.
Like, you know, from young to old people fucking is hilarious.
Like on the stools?
I've seen in between slot machines, I've seen it. Jesus Christ. There was this lady, I got a little funny story. I was a supervisor at that time.
Yeah.
I had like my little section. I was watching about 6 games. And this lady, she was a really heavy lady. She was maybe about like 5'3". Easy, like 4, 450.
Yeah.
Right?
Thick.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, like, I used to always, like, joke around with her, tease her and everything.
She was a regular.
Oh, no. Like, she was my employee. I mean, I was watching her deal black.
Oh, she was an employee. Okay.
Yeah, she was an employee. So, and then all of a sudden, and I was, you know, I was a supervisor. I was the guy in the middle with the suit and everything, watching my games.
Yeah.
She's like, Jason, get over here. And I'm like, what do you want? Like, she was always, like, complaining. You know? Also, yeah. Like, finally, I'm like, and I was young at the time, I'm like, yeah, whatever. And there was this guy just sitting at our table, just, I'm like.
He was just jerking it?
You better believe it. It was double deck.
The cards, not the jerking.
You had to touch the cards.
Yeah.
And she's like, he's jerking off at a table. And then finally, by the time I go over there, I'm like, oh my God, he's actually doing it. And I got on the phone. I see the guy. I mean, he came. He was like,
And
then threw in his cards, picked up his chips, and ran out. I was dying laughing. It was hilarious.
You know, I mean, someone's jerking off. You're like, this is weird. You know, I'm in a weird profession. This is a weird situation. But to have to see him come, really. That takes it to.
He just gave like that little like wiggle, that little shake, like you know, after you take a piss, you're just like, you kind of get the chills.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I don't even know what to say.
I worked graveyard.
How old is this guy?
Oh God, he was like in his, you know, about mid 60s.
Oh wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? Good for him then. If he's maybe he popped a, you know,
a
Viagra and was trying to trying to take things to the limit, and then was like, oh, I forgot to pick up chicks. I might as well just knock this thing out with this 400-pound beauty.
Yeah, and it was hard. And another time, I worked graveyard mostly nights, like everything from 8 o'clock in the 8 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I worked all hours of the night, and
that's when shit gets really nuts.
Oh,
right?
Oh my God, I've seen everything. That's where all like the homeless hookers and drug dealers, you name it. Oh. People are on a run, or people are trying to make a comeback. And sometimes you just get people coming out of the nightclubs or whatever.
Right.
I've seen it all. And it's hilarious. You see like old people going to the bathroom together. I'm like, oh my God, here we go. Lady coming back with her hair all fucked up.
Yeah. A blue-haired Betty got her cotton candy wig all fluffed up. Nothing wrong with that. So what... are you able to date any of these fine midnight ladies?
Oh, midnight ladies?
Yeah, did you ever take home any of the clientele?
Every now and then, you'll meet like a nice girl and everything like that. But like, I would never date a gambler.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
I did, but I learned my lesson. I mean, we all did. So what time you get off? I'm like, I'll go home sick right now. What's up? Like, where's
Welcome back to Learning Lessons with Rick Ingram.
Yeah.
Wow. What made you start working at the casino? It's just availability of the job and.
Actually, I was in LA. I mean, I was promoting nightclubs. I was working and then. I just wasn't really making it. And then my dad was sick. So my mom wants like, hey, you know, I kind of need help, blah, blah, blah. So, and I went home and I needed a job. And so that's when the casino just opened up. I mean, they weren't even open to the public yet. I just barely got an application. Actually, I didn't even get an application. I just walked in and I got introduced to the boss and he's like, great, you're hired. You're working tomorrow.
Wow.
And then the rest is history.
I did shows at Fantasy Springs. Out
That's another place I worked at.
You did work there?
Yeah. Did you do the improv?
Yeah.
Upstairs?
I did the improv. What's weird is it's like a seasonal improv or something.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And so they booked me to headline. I'm like, all right. And so I'm doing Friday and Saturday night. And while I'm doing shows at the comedy club is literally just a conference room. That
they put
some chairs and tables in.
Yeah, with a paper brick wall.
Yeah, paper brick wall.
That's where the chick hit the guy over the head with the stiletto at.
At the improv?
No, at the improv, like that, a nightclub there upstairs. Oh, yeah. And
I got there. I'm just like, okay, this is interesting. There was a large outdoor concert area mm-hmm. next to there. So the first night I walked down, I thought, you know, I'm going to go see how the show is. And there was a line going down. I'm like, nice, there's a bunch of people here to see me. But they were actually all waiting to see Kenny Loggins. and I looked at the clientele. I'm like, I pray these people are in my crowd because I do a lot of crowd interaction. And I was just like, man, I'm going to be here for 5 hours talking to these people. But they were all in line to see Kenny Loggins, every one of them. There was like five people at my show. They were all about 200 to 300 years old. And it was intense.
You know, I worked there for many years, and, you know, they didn't market that enough.
Yeah.
And they didn't market it at all. There was
I was about to say that. I think there was a poster in the elevator.
That's all it was. And no one took the elevator because that was the way to, like, the gaming offices or something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they did no marketing, which sucked.
There was a dude in one of my crowds named Jim Bob, and I only remember because it's I literally was like, there's no way that's your name. And he brought me his driver's license, and I was expecting it to say James Robert, but his name was actually Jim Bob. It was like Jim Bob, like Daniels or something. I'm like, this is really your name? And he was like, yeah. And he was full on, sounded like a Kentucky redneck, but he was from somewhere in Coachella Valley.
Oh, yeah. It's all farm out there. It's all farm.
It's weird because the whole area, the Palm Springs area, it's like super crazy Trump-loving Republicans and extremely flamboyant gay guys. Yeah. And like they're gambling together and they were at the comedy show together, like sitting here just like, but they didn't seem to fight. They all seemed to get along. I was just like, this is so weird. This bizarre world's colliding out. And
yeah, it's very Democratic and very Republican. It's like literally from one extreme to the other, you have old money and then you have new money.
Yeah.
And then you have very conservative people, and then you have
super liberal.
Yeah, super liberal.
I also thought it was weird that the Palm Springs area has about 45 radio stations, which just seems so bizarre to me. Because, like, I've been to giant cities where there's, like, 4 to 7 radio stations. But out there, like, they were like, yeah, we got hit up these radio stations because, you know, ticket sales aren't good because we've never told anyone there's a comedy club here. And we just kept going radio station after radio station. It was like 5 or 6 hours of doing radio. I'm just like, who's listening to any of these stations?
Like nobody.
Yeah. It was a very bizarre setup they had. But, you know, shows were good, I guess. It was just a very weird experience. Would you move back here now?
Yes, I moved back. Yeah, after the I was dealing blackjack out there. Then the pandemic hit.
Oh, okay.
And then I got COVID.
You did?
Yeah.
From working?
No. I was taking care of a loved one, and I don't know how. Somehow I just ended up getting COVID, and then I can't go back to work again.
Yeah.
I'm still, like, out.
You are?
Yeah.
So when did you get COVID? What month?
I got COVID in late November. I was in ICU for 8 days.
Really?
And then there was too many people. That's when the hospitals got flooded again.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Second wave.
Then they're like, boom, kicked me out. Then they put me into a regular room for like a day and a half. And then I should have been there longer. But then they're like, you seem well enough to be at home. So go home. We're going to send you home some oxygen and everything, which I never got. And
of course not.
Yeah.
The hospital system in this country is ridiculous. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I didn't know I was. I went into diabetic shock, and I was in the ICU for 4 days in Burbank, and then they're like, we got to move you to the regular part of the hospital. And the regular part of the hospital in Burbank is like something out of like 1953. Like they put me in my room and I'm like looking around, I'm just like, this looks like a really shitty college dorm room. And it was hot as balls. Had to be like 85. I go, it's so hot in here. And they go, yeah, this wing doesn't have air condition. I'm like, you're in the valley? You don't have air condition in a hospital? And then the nurse goes, I can bring you a box fan. I'm just like, you guys have like a storage room of box fans instead of just, I don't know, air conditioning a hospital? So I was so trying to get out of there. It was so hot and miserable. But ICU.
You got to get on Medi-Cal.
That's the secret.
You got to be homeless. And then they treat you like the president or something. It's crazy.
They give you the goods.
Yeah.
Same thing in my hospital. I was just like, I got a fan and everything like that.
So now are you considered like a COVID long hauler? Is that the deal?
Yes. I'm trying to get into like a study or anything like that. So lung damage.
You do have lung damage.
Wow. Yeah.
What other side effects do you have? Do you have the
bad chronic fatigue, brain fog is horrible.
Really? Brutal.
Like my joints are killing me all the time. So.
Wow. And then, so you get vaccinated? Did you get vaxxed?
I did get vaxxed, yes.
So now you've got antibodies and vaccine.
Yeah, but the antibodies only last for like 3 months.
Oh, okay.
People are like, I'm good. I'm like, no, dude, it's like maybe 3 months.
Yeah. People don't know. They just like, I feel like the South right now is just set on like, no, we're going to get herd immunity by all getting it. They're like in the 1980s and I think in the 90s even, I don't know if they still do it, but people used to have chicken pox parties.
Oh yeah.
Remember that shit? How dumb that is? I there are people who are doing that shit with COVID and I'm just, my mind is boggled by how dumb people are, but, that's fucking terrifying that you're still feeling the effects and you got it in November.
Yeah.
So now do you get disability? Is that?
I'm good. I have money saved, but I might have to go on disability. I mean, I don't want to, but.
Yeah, yeah. But I just mean like, is that an option for COVID?
I guess that is an option. But I mean, like some days I'm like struggling. Like I have to bring like a bag of medicine. I left it in my car, but it's like everywhere I go, I got to bring it in case I can't breathe.
Right.
Yeah.
Damn, that's nuts, man.
It is. And people are like, oh, it's like having the flu. Fuck, I wish.
Yeah, that's
like, I mean, it sucks being at home. I mean, like, and some days, like, all my friends ask me to go out and hang out. And I just, like, I can't.
Yeah. Did you think you were going to die when you were in the
hospital? Oh, they told me I was going to die. It was funny because I was fine on a Monday. And then Tuesday, I had a regular doctor's appointment, you know, just like a checkup, whatever.
Right.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, I think I'm getting sick or maybe I have a cold, you know, seasonal cold. And then all of a sudden I had no symptoms whatsoever. No fever, no loss of taste. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, you know, I just don't feel well. I'm just really tired, really tired. And then I took some cherry NyQuil. I drank some. And then.
Sip a little of that red drink.
Oh, yeah. It didn't work. and then all of a sudden, like, it didn't work. And then all of a sudden on Saturday, I'm like, I started coughing. I'm like, and I was coughing up red stuff. I'm like, I pray to God this cherry NyQuil, not blood.
Yeah.
And it was blood. Sunday, I was extremely, like, tired. I could barely breathe. And then it was blood. And
I like that you drink enough cherry NyQuil that you're trying to convince yourself, like, you know what, I'm probably just coughing up the cherry NyQuil.
And my aunt that I take care of, she's 75 years old. She hasn't driven like in 2 years. She has cancer. And so she's like, oh, we got to take you to the doctor. We got to take you to the hospital, the ER. I'm like, no, I'll be fine. So finally, I'm like, all right, fine. She's like, I'll drive you. I'm like, no. She's like, no, I'll drive you because we're going to go to the good hospital, not the shitty one.
Right.
So she drove me and it was hilarious because a 15-minute drive took her like almost 45 minutes. It's like being stuck in first gear all the way through.
Wow.
And then by the time I got there, my oxygen level was in the 30s.
Damn.
They were surprised how I was still living. And then they told me, hey, you know what? Like, we're going to have to intubate you. I said, no. And then they're like, all right, we're going to get everything you could. But,
so they wanted to put you on a ventilator immediately.
Yeah, and I said no. And then
why did you say no? You just heard bad things.
Yeah, I just heard everyone that I know that went on a ventilator
dies.
Dies.
Yeah. Or they, it's impossible to take him off, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And the doctor's like, you know what? If thank God you came in, because you know, you would have died in your sleep. And
right.
Also, just to let you know, it's going to be very touch and go, and you might not live.
Wow.
You know. So he's like, do you have a DNR? Are you a donor?
Yeah.
I need your next of kin, all this other stuff like that. So I'm like, hey, so I gave him all the stuff, and I'm like, all right. I'm like, so he's like, do you have your cell phone with you? I'm like, yeah. He's like, make your phone calls.
Wow.
Jeez. And, yeah, and then I'm like, I get no service. He's like, I'm sorry. Yeah.
You should have gotten a better plan. If you had been with Verizon, this wouldn't be an issue. Call your loved ones, Verizon. Yeah. I've got all the good ads, I'm telling you. I miss my calling.
I put it on Facebook. Like, I'm never on Facebook. I put on, like, I just typed a message, and somehow, like, my cousin called me, which him and I are close. He's like a brother to me.
Yeah.
My cousin Daniel, and he called me, and it came through. I'm like, hey, this is what's going on.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing. I guess he called everybody.
Wow.
And, but I'm here.
You're alive, man.
Yeah.
You're on the podcast. So, you know, things only go up from here.
My bucket list,
yeah. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you being on. It's unbelievable stories, both of you guys. Honestly, it feels like COVID got closer to killing him than heroin, meth, and crack did for you.
Honestly,
so,
yeah. You're right.
I think both of you, again, this is Defying Death with Rick Ingram. All right. Well, thanks, guys. We're going to bring Sarah in to ask some follow-up questions that I missed because I'm a psychopath, basically. But we'll bring Sarah in, and then we'll keep going.
Say hi.
Oh, man.
We're back.
We're back.
Yeah.
I mean, on death's door.
Yeah.
These two.
I mean, I feel like we haven't lived in comparison.
I know. Who do you think has been, has had to take more drugs? I guess Jason has been forced to take.
Yeah, I haven't had to take it.
That's true.
Other than the wisdom teeth.
Other than the wisdom teeth,
that's true,
which
that's
is
true.
What started it all.
That is true.
Jason, do you think that this is going to start you on a path of inhalers, like an addiction to lung?
Oh, I partied. I just didn't say anything.
Nice.
Let him take the glory, huh?
What's the most amount you've seen somebody lose at Agua Caliente?
I don't know about that casino.
Oh.
What's the most you've ever seen anyone lose at a casino?
Millions.
Millions? See, like, I'm a degenerate gambler, but, like, I might lose, like, $1,000.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot to me. Like, that's, like, obnoxious.
I lost a few hundred once when I was in Vegas with Pete C. And I literally spent the last 3 days, because I lost it all, like, the first night. Spent the next 3 days just being like, I am going to burn this town to the ground. What was I thinking?
Jared, did you ever gamble? Was that like, other than with your life?
Yeah. Well, no, I've gambled. I've gone to Vegas and I've done work in Vegas. So, and I'd spend $20 and lose it and go back to my room.
Yeah.
It's just it's an addiction that didn't cross over to.
Yeah.
See, I am like,
you don't get that sensation like you do.
No.
The sweet, sweet heroin.
Yeah.
I have slot machine apps on my phone.
You do?
Yeah. Oh, I like practice.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Most women love slot machines.
I love slot machines. And I just, like, I don't know. It's like slot machines and true crime. Like, I know I like true crime because I really like planning.
Yeah.
And like, what else is murder, but like the ultimate plan.
Yeah.
But like slot machines, I can't really tell like why. I don't know if it's just like the idea of like being lucky. I think when you work in the entertainment business and you see so many other people who are, because it's kind of like the royal family, like people are just born into it.
Yeah.
And it's very random for a commoner like myself or Rick to get into the royal family.
Yeah.
So I think like,
I've been not in the royal family for 20 years
yeah,
now.
Yeah, same. So like, I think when it comes to slot machines, it's like being a commoner getting into that rich people. I don't know what it is.
My first time gambling, I was probably 23 or something, and my family was going to Reno for a KU basketball tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I drove up there, and I went to a couple of college basketball games and was having fun. And my dad was like, I'm going to go play the slots. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. So we went down and I put like $5 in a, I can't remember. Okay. I was either playing the nickel slots maybe or something. But like the fourth crank, and I don't push the button. I crank the thing because I like, you know, the sensation. And then it just started, yeah, it started going off. And I'm like, what do I win? And then it just started pumping out. Coins.
Oh, real, like hard.
Yeah, like real
before.
Thing. I'm like, this is sweet. Uh-huh. And I think I won like $280
or
something.
Wow, that's good.
But then I'm just like, this is awesome. I'm so good at this. Even though I literally just pushed like the three lines.
Right.
But, oh my God, I'm so skilled. But I've never won again.
See, that's why I have the apps on my phone because I need to practice.
Yeah. You need to know
slot
the right
machines.
Time to.
Right. Yeah. So that by the time I get to Vegas, I've practiced enough.
Smart. Are they rigged?
No, they're not rigged. But it's funny. You see, everybody have their rituals, and some people like to like rub the screen.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I sit next to the people that bang on it a lot or tap it, and I'm like, I have to move because
wow.
I'm like, no.
I don't need that.
I think I just like drinking and sitting down in a place where there's
sure.
an activity.
Yeah, I'm okay. sure everyone has it. I'm sure. Don't you have your rituals when you watch your games?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm an athlete. Head. Yeah. I
What's the weirdest that. Ritual you've seen at a casino?
Jerking off on their table. Yeah.
I've seen a guy.
That's the coolest. We've all been there.
You tell me some guy lost. He kept on hitting himself, like not just like slapping. It was just like full on face,
whoa,
like
punching himself.
Yeah. Punching himself, and
wow.
my boss was like, there were people were like. We should go and talk to him.
Like, Jason, this is you. Like, I'm not talking to that fucking lunatic.
Like, this guy literally had like a welt coming off his head.
Sure.
Dang.
Yeah. I remember being in Vegas once and like a guy came to the table and he put down money and it was all bloody and he had a stab wound. And they were like, you can't gamble here. And he's like, what do you mean I have money? And you're like, you've been stabbed.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot sit here.
I got another one. Some guy was playing poker, and they were trying to figure out, like, why is there blood on the cards? Why? Because this guy had, it was early in the morning. It was like around 8, 9 o'clock in the morning. This guy had hemorrhoid surgery earlier that morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was an outpatient. And
oh
that's how.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say he cut off his own toe.
No.
Oh my God. That story was so insane.
Yeah, that's like a Jared Leto drug addict movie. Horrifying.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
definitely
yeah.
going to be in the next Saw. That's going to be in Saw 7.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, I remember
I
got to
get this nail down further.
Yeah.
No, I think there's still a hangnail on there. You know what? What if I took it down to the bone?
Yeah. I can't.
Well, what I would do to see a video of it, but I, you know, it's not in my head. I don't remember it.
You don't remember it?
No.
You have to have, like, have you lost a lot of quote-unquote friends? Like, I can't imagine that you have.
Did you make friends?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you get to a point where you lose everybody. I mean, I lost my whole family. No one talked to me. That's how you get on Skid Row. I mean, no one.
Right.
You can't
yeah.
sleep over anyone's house.
Well, that was my other question was like, how did you get from Oakland to Skid Row?
Well, I dropped out of Santa Cruz. I almost said graduated, but
yeah.
You
dropped
did.
Out. No, I dropped out.
Okay.
And I have an uncle in Culver City that was like, we'll get you down here. I'll give you one shot. We'll get you into rehab with the insurance you got. And if you fuck up, never talk to me again.
Oh,
so
dang.
I fucked up and he honored that. He said, never talk to me again.
Oh man.
And, now we're very close.
Oh, good.
Everything's good. But he honored that, and mm-hmm. I thank him for honoring it because it probably you
tough
know,
love
it,
is
yeah
a
tough
thing,
love
yeah.
yeah tough love.
But
works.
I think like when it comes to because I've had several friends go through nothing nearly as bad as what you've gone through, but it feels like when it comes to alcohol and drugs, like you have to want to get clean, right? It's like.
Yeah.
It's not enough that, like, your friends want you and your family want you to be better.
Oh, no.
You're the one that has to be
yeah.
behind the choice. It's
yeah,
not your choice.
Otherwise, you're just going to go, they don't understand. They don't know how
yeah.
good it feels.
Well, for me, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, yeah, I had to lose everything. And then that wasn't even enough, and I had to lose body parts.
Yeah.
So the bathtub.
Yeah.
What kind of bath? Was it like a built-in bathtub or was it one of those like clawfoot tubs?
No, it was not a clawfoot tub.
Yeah, if it's in Chinatown.
Yeah. It was actually a boarding house. I figured this out
Oh.
After that, it was actually like a shared bathroom on a floor of a boarding house.
Oh, like a hostel?
Like a human trafficking situation,
oh,
probably. Or, I don't know.
So
I
that's mean, the best thing that's happened to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite the distraction from their other horror.
Wasn't even his blood now that he thinks about it.
Well, you did say that, right? Yeah. It wasn't your blood?
Oh, no, it was my blood.
Oh, I thought you said it wasn't your blood in the bathtub. And I was like, how
oh,
did
no,
we
it
not?
Oh, no, it was, well, first of all, it was like lukewarm water mixed with blood. It wasn't
so you filled
so
the tub up.
So you did run the water?
I was bathing.
Yeah. You were bathing?
I think I was covered in blood and wanted to take a bath.
Right.
Oh.
But I ended up just losing a lot of blood.
And so, do you know who did like beat you up? Like,
it was
not like you
no,
can press
I
charges.
I, no,
like,
no.
Hi, I was on meth and I got
trifecta.
No, I don't know exactly what happened. I know that it was a combination of someone did something to me, and then I did some like self.
You're like, I'm gonna fix this.
Yeah, I'm gonna fix this. I'm do some surgery or whatever, and.
Right.
And I ended up fucking myself up pretty bad, but
oh, so you cut your face? Like you did something to your face?
I didn't start it, but I ended it.
Oh wow!
And then it like you know I had to get surgery and it got infected and it was a big nightmare. But yeah, so that was kind of like the after I lost everything, meaning like house, car, mm-hmm. family, all that. It just wasn't enough, so I guess I had to lose a little bit more, and it worked.
I think a lot of people, I've already lost so much. I don't want to feel the pain of the reality I'm living in. So
yeah.
And then like,
sorry to bring it down, but
no, it's okay. But like when I think of Skid Row, like I always think of Skid Row as like how it started basically from the Reagan administration, right? When they like emptied out all the mental hospitals and they just drove them to downtown LA and dropped them off and never came back. That's how
it
started.
It got heavy during that time. Skid Row in LA has been around since about the 20s.
Yeah.
But yeah, for sure. And then combined with the crack epidemic, it really populated in the 80s
boomed.
And the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, I just also watched that documentary.
About
that,
the Cecil?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, that's down
that's
there.
That's what I was thinking, too.
That's all I could think about.
Like, they said that it opened up, and then I think it was the 30s maybe, or it was during the Depression that it got, it started filling up with transients and homeless people who had
and
nowhere
serial
else to go.
Killers.
And serial killers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
everybody. I think Tyler Perry was down there at one point.
No.
Bobby Brown.
No.
Yeah.
So, did you sell their autographs?
No,
for
no, no.
Heroin?
No, but people like.
Which
like,
snake were they riding? Tell us. Give us this. Tell us about
like,
the time
that's
Tyler
not
Perry
like,
ruined you.
Yeah. No, no. I think Tyler Perry, before he got famous, was like homeless, not on drugs.
Oh, right.
And then it's like a happy story. He made it.
Yeah.
Bobby Brown, I think, was the opposite. But
yeah.
Yeah. He started out and
yeah.
then went.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So
sure.
it's a wide array of people.
And then, but like when you said you work in visual effects now, I was like, who better than someone who has had the craziest daydreams
well,
of all time?
I mean, I'm more of like on the production side and I'm not an artist in that regards. I'm like a production assistant for a
Is
visual effects
what,
company.
Is that what you want to do forever? Like what, do you have a dream job?
Yeah, I do.
Like?
I don't know if I'm really allowed to talk about it, but
Is it slam poetry?
No. No.
He's ashamed to talk about that.
No, I wrote a book and I talked to my lawyer and he was like, don't like say too much.
Uh-huh, sure. No, don't.
And I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm coming on here to talk about my book because that wasn't my plan.
Yeah.
But no, my dream is to, you know, be a writer. It's looking like that. I can't really give details, but it's looking like that can happen.
So
nice.
Cool.
That's great, man.
You want to share your story with others so that they don't
I mean, I didn't make people write stories and they're very talented and I'm not, you know, I was just handed stories you know, I just told you guys like one or two stories.
Yeah. I mean, we got 20 minutes where I can only imagine what
I know. We might have to bring
be.
These guys back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. 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 So, yeah, there's just too many and I can't, I'm not trying, like I was handed these stories. I got to.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You
need
to.
You fucked up the right way to live life.
I fucked up the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, so,
I hope that happens.
Thank you very much.
You deserve that.
Thank you.
What about you, Jason? Do you have like a dream job? Like, since I know that you're not working right now, but is there something you've always wanted to do that you're like, well, maybe this is my chance? Clean slate.
There's like, two things. I have two art degrees. I was gonna go to I'm trying to get myself through grad school. Like, I created a clothing line. I just started, actually, a few weeks ago. This.
What does that say?
Oh, it's called East Low Soul. Oh. It's bringing, like, the essence of East LA or the east side of Los Angeles to the masses.
Cool.
I mean, not here to glorify gang life or anything like that, which is really popular, but I just want to bring, like,
black
like
and
the culture
gold
to everybody. Yeah. But, I mean...
You so have two art degrees, is what you said. So yeah,
artistic. I mean, I love comedy. Like I told you before, mm-hmm. I would love to become like a comedic writer. I mean, I got picked up to be on a pilot like a long time ago, mm-hmm. but then it got shelved. Then the other one, like the producer, I mean, not the creator, passed away. So,
oh, it sucks.
Yeah, and then I got into casino business. Started making fast, easy money, and then.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite comedian? If you had to say, is that?
God, there's so many. I grew up listening to Eddie Murphy, but you know, I love Greg Giraldo. Love Joey Diaz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, you guys.
Legends. Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
Uncle Joey.
Giraldo is my favorite roast joke of all time.
Oh, he was
Lisa
so good.
Lampanelli's kind of like the Octomom. She hasn't had 8 kids, but she has had 80 fingers inside of her. My favorite roast jokes
that's
of all
so
time.
So good. No, that's a good crew.
Yeah.
Good list of comics.
Yeah, that's a great list.
Yeah.
There's so many too, but I mean, that's just to name a few. I mean, I grew up listening to comedy. I used to sneak my parents Eddie Murphy tapes and other like, and I used to tell like dirty jokes like, in class that kids had no clue what it is.
What about current comedians?
Oh yeah, like Joey Diaz is one of my favorites. Yeah. I mean, Sarah, like you're hilarious.
Oh and you don't have to say us. We know.
Oh my god!
If you didn't follow us, you wouldn't
be
here.
I know your bits. Like it's hilarious.
Oh, they need me? Oh, okay.
All right, that's all right.
I have to go down to the main
room.
We'll
wrap it up.
That's how important I am.
Yeah, they're calling
you
down.
But you guys are.
All right, well, thank you guys.
Thank you guys
we appreciate
so
it.
Thank you
honestly,
for coming on
the very
show.
Cool.
Yeah.
Not at all the stories I was expecting to hear when I prejudged you by, you know, reading the book's cover.
Yeah.
But thank you. I appreciate
you
guys being on.
Yeah.
This is Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. We'll be back with more. Thanks, guys.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM IngramPod on Twitter. That's IngraHam Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye to everyday people.
Special thanks to The Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.